What I want to talk about is basically comparison of the singular reduction technique, singular reduction of symmetries for three systems, well, three types of systems, Hamiltonian systems, multisymplectic systems, and distributional Hamiltonian systems. It's actually interesting. I mean, the similarities and differences are sort of fairly interesting, and there are some things which I did not expect when they happened. So let's firstly introduce the systems, just for the sake of notation. We take a Hamiltonian system, so I have a phase space, symplectic form, and the Hamiltonian. Phase space is a smooth manifold. I have the symplectic form over there. And here's the notational bit, the left interior, so Hamiltonian vector field of a smooth function f is a vector field which contracted on the left with symplectic form omega gives you the differential of the symplectic form. And if I take for the function f my Hamiltonian, then integral curves of the Hamiltonian describe the evolution of the system. Now, I will jump a little bit sideways because I want to partly motivate the form of the multisymplectic systems. So let's look at the time-dependent Hamiltonian system. So if we want to make the system time-dependent, we just take product of phase space with R. We introduce time, this is a projection on R. Now, if the Hamiltonian is time-dependent, then, well, actually, whether it's time-dependent or not, we can introduce a form capital omega, which is a symplectic form minus dh wedge. This should be wedge, sorry, not cross, dt. This is a form which has one-dimensional null distribution, and evolutions are sections, a map from R to p cross r, sections of time, such that for every vector, for all vector fields on x, tangent to the fibers of t, the contraction of x with omega pulled back by the section sigma is zero. So this is a complicated way of saying that sigma section is really mapped from R, so it's, if you look at the first component, it's a, well, actually, you look at the product, it actually gives you a curve, and this curve is an integral curve of the null distribution. The reason I want to say it this complicated way is because multisymplectic systems are exactly the same, only the dimension varies. So suppose I have now, I have a phase space P, which is not exactly the same as over there, and fibered over a base M, with the dimension of the base is N, and I look at a closed N plus 1 form, it's this analog of this, which has the technical property is that if I take three vectors tangent to the fibers, then it's zero. This is actually not essential, but that in practice we are working with this. Now, the evolutions are given by local sections of this projection map such that if I take arbitrary vector field tangent to the fibers of mu, contract with omega, pull it back by sigma, I get zero. Now, these equations, this form of equation appears, well, you can put your nonlinear wave equation in this form, Young-Wills equation is of this form, and gravity is of this form. So there is a fairly large class. Also, there is lots of work on multisymplectic aspect of non-relativistic field theories like waves, well, nonlinear waves, and this is connected. I mean, this was the basis for a similar formalism was a basis point for these multi-symplectic integrators of Jerry and friends. So now the last system I want to introduce, so let's go back. That's what the Hamiltonian system is. And the next system I want to talk about is a distributional Hamiltonian system. It's almost like a Hamiltonian system, but not quite. The form is not defined on the whole. Here we have a form omega, which is defined on the tangent space of P. Here I have a phase space P, but my form, which I call var pi, and the reason is because it sort of looks like omega, but it isn't, is defined only on a distribution. This distribution H need not be involutive. Actually, it's more interesting when it is not involutive. And actually, when this distribution is not involutive, then this system describes non-holonomic linear constraints. Now, if I have a Hamiltonian also, and now we can mimic the Hamiltonian vector fields the same way here. So if I have a smooth function on P, I can associate to it a vector field, which I will call distributional Hamiltonian vector field of F, to be the unique vector field with values in the distribution H, which satisfies this equation. The form var pi lives only in H, but so it can be contracted with a YF because YF has values in H. The result is one form on the distribution. Well, distribution is a collection of inner spaces. And it's symplectic. On each inner space, you have a symplectic form.
There's
no it cannot be, you can't even ask the question. Not only that you can, if the distribution were involutive, you could say, you could ask and answer the question. Here, you can't even ask it.
Because the form varies
greatly? Yes, all structures are small. This is also infinity category. And so here I take, well, this is partial differential of F. So I take a differential of F and restrict it to the distribution. And again, what happens is that if I take, for F, I take the Hamiltonian of the system. So this is the Hamiltonian of the unconstrained system. This distribution actually in the form describes the constraints. I'm not going to talk about it because it would take a little bit too far away from the main topic. But what happens if I take for F the Hamiltonian of the system, then this distribution Hamiltonian vector field gives the evolution. So the evolution follows integral curves of this. Actually, this system, is a special case of a formalism proposed by Bocharov and Vinogradov in 1977 to study. Theirs was slightly more complicated because they wanted to study not only linear non-holonomic constraints but affine non-holonomic constraints. But that's basically what it is. So these are the systems. And now I want to, okay, so what is the singular reduction? Basically, this is the reduction. We assume that we have an action of a Lie group, which is proper, not necessarily free. And we want to describe the situation in orbit spaces. So essentially, okay, in this lecture, I'm not going, there have been so many people working in this field that it's almost impossible. I could spend the whole lecture listing the references, so I will list only one. The first work in this field was the classical paper of Arns, Marsden, and Moncrief in 81, if I remember, on bifurcations of the momentum map. That was the first paper which opened the field, and now everybody jumps in. So let's look, study first, look at the assumption of the properness, what it gives us. If you have a Lie group and the Lie algebra, Gottic G, we assume that we have the action is a proper, this is just notational, alternative notations. We can, since the action is proper, the isotropic groups of this action are compact, so isotropic groups are elements of G which fix P, and if we have a compact subgroup of G, we can construct, we can look at the set of the orbit type K, and this is the set of points in P such that there exists element in G such that the isotropy group of P is conjugate, it's simply G conjugating K. And this is a set of orbit type, and this is a local manifold. Now, we introduce a K-invariant metric, K. So for Hamiltonian system, if this were symmetric with canonical Hamiltonian system, this would be the kinetic energy metric, for example. And define the perpendicular distribution to P sub to the orbit type set. Since it's a local manifold, the tangent bundle of this, the tangent bundle space of this manifold is well defined. So what I look here is really, I look at the set of vectors tangent along orbit type set to the whole phase space P, which are orthogonal to the tangent space of PK. Now, what is interesting, actually, that to define this set, this perpendicular normal tangent bundle, you don't need a metric. Every metric gives you the same result. So this, but it's the easiest way to describe it. And what we have now, having proper action, we automatically get a stratification. The only thing that perhaps I write it, I describe it as a little bit usually we talk this about stratification of the orbit space, but actually the whole space P, it's a manifold, is stratified by the set of orbit type K. So it's useful to see that it's already here. And there's this local finiteness and frontier conditions for stratification imply that for every point P in the manifold P, there's just an open neighborhood and a compact subgroup K of G such that P, that the stratum P sub K intersected U is dense in U. And so actually I was working backwards. The usual formulation is this, that the quotient space, the orbit space, is stratified by these local manifolds, and this is a statement which is just pulled back. Now, we will need later the structure of this space. So let me mention here, because that's the right place. If I take this orbit space of the, so I have action of proper action of G on P, I lift it to the to the tangent bundle, and of course it preserves the orbit type manifold, so I can look at the quotient, and this quotient is not linear. It has conical singularities, and the best way of seeing it, look at R2 and quotient R2 by the Rotbach circle group, and you get half light. So that is the most trivial example of this situation. And we have the product structure. Now, this product structure is
set theoretical. It's not in any.
I said that this. The statement here is that this conical singularity as a differential space in the sense of Sikorsky is correct, but this statement about
the product structure is not a product structure in the sense of differential spaces, just set theoretically. So now we've gone over proper action, so let's look at symmetries.
So the reason I'm following it this way, because I try to go to the concrete examples as late as possible, this property is common to all three examples. So now if you have a symmetry of a theory, what is a symmetry depends on the theory. So if we have a Hamiltonian system, then we would have to be the action G of G should preserve symplectic form omega in the Hamiltonian. If we have a distributional Hamiltonian system, then the distribution H has to be preserved, the linear symplectic form var pi has to be preserved, and of course the Hamiltonian. Now, in the case of the multisymplectic system, I want the multisymplectic from capital omega to be preserved. And here is actually the assumption which I needed, is one should be able to weaken it. I want to be the action of the group be in each fiber separately. So it should not mix fibers. So if in each case we get the orbit space P over G, and the aim of reduction of symmetries, naively speaking, is simply we want to describe the dynamics, the reduced dynamics on the orbit space.
Question.
Yes?
You pointed out earlier that the multi-symplectic case is generalizes from the time-dependent.
Yeah.
So just to specialize the notion of preserving fibers.
It means that I don't have...
It means that I don't move time.
Yes. All right.
Now there is one more tool we need, and actually this tool was mentioned in the preceding lecture, and that's, actually not exactly this, but related. I want to talk about Stefan-Sussman theorem, which is the main tool here. So first I have to describe what I mean by generalized distribution of the manifold. And roughly speaking, it's a linear subset of the tangent bundle space, which is locally spanned by smooth vector field. Which means the assumption that are spanned by smooth vector fields gives you the definite jump condition on the dimension. Dimension can jump lower, but not higher. Now, an accessible set of generalized distribution is a maximal subset of the manifold P, such that every two points in the subset can be connected by a piecewise smooth curve in P with tangent vectors in the distribution. And the basic theorem I lump them together, Stefan-Sussman theorem. Sussman's paper appeared in 73. Stefan's paper appeared in 74. There are some notes of Stefan, which is of 72, and notes of Sussman of 71. So basically, the form which I want is taken partly from Stefan, partly from Sussman. Accessible sets of a generalized distribution on a manifold P are immersed submanifolds of P. That's essentially verbatim from Sussman, and this notion of a smooth foliation with singularities on P is taken from Stefan. So this is one additional structure which we have. So let me point So we are actually going now to the Hamiltonian, specializing now after this to symplectic systems, Hamiltonian systems. But so what happens is that the stratification structure, which I talked before about before, is independent of what type of system I have. Now the this thing will appear in certain cases, one. So let's now talk about look at the Hamiltonian system. And I assume to begin with that the action of the group is actually Hamiltonian. So the group not only preserves omega and h, but also has a momentum map. It's actually invariant momentum map, equivariant. So in particular, for every element of the Lie algebra, the action of the one-parameter group generated by this element is simply generated by the Hamiltonian vector field of the momentum in this direction. Now, so this is the momentum map, but independently of the momentum map, actually I can talk about the generalized distribution spanned by Hamiltonian vector fields of G-invariant functions. Now, whether momentum map exists or not, this distribution exists. The fact that this distribution this is a G-invariant distribution follows from the fact that the action is symplectic. So we have a gradation of structure. This is weaker. Hamiltonian action is stronger. So we can define via Stefan-Susner theorem, we get a smooth foliation with singularities on P given by accessible sets of E. Now, if we look at the momentum, value of the momentum J of P of the momentum map, it is constant on each leaf of this foliation, and also the isotropy groups are constant on each leaf of the foliation. So this is a comment will be useful, and actually one can make a stronger statement. If you have a leaf which is contained in J inverse of mu, so that's level set of the momentum map, and in the certain type, you know, the stratum PK, then and I take the action of the isotropy group of mu, orbit of the isotropy mu acting on isotropy mu acting on this leaf, I get actually a connected component of this set. Now the map which associates to P the leaf of the stratification through P is called by Ortega and Ratiu the optimal momentum map. I promised Judy that I'll talk about it. So, no, constant. Constant, because really, these are G-invariant, vector fields. They keep the isotropy. So now what happens is on the orbit space, I have this structures with which I was sort of fairly cavalier here, but I want to project it to the orbit space. So first we have the stratification of the orbit space by orbit type, which is known. Now we can project leaves of this distribution, of this foliation, to the orbit space, and we get a foliation with singularities. With this one has to be a little bit careful, one has to, because since the orbit space is not a manifold, one has to explain what it means, and I'll do it in a moment. But we have a third structure, which is the partition by the projections of level sets of the momentum map. And essentially, most, if not all, the statements of singular reduction are statements about the intersection of these three structures. It's not exactly, sorry, I should be more precise, not intersection of the structures, but intersections of sets of elements of these structures. So let me explain first this foliation. What happens is that each accessible set of E is contained in a stratum in P, a stratum corresponding to fixed orbit type. Therefore, if I project it, its image will be on the, its image will be actually in the stratum, since the manifold. So actually, by this singular foliation here, I mean that each stratum is singularly foliated, is foliated by manifolds, the way Stefan Sussman theorem indicates. Now, so let me for example, show the relation, because this should be curly F, the singular foliation. So the leaves, you see the the leaves of the singular foliation are simply connected components, and these spaces we recognize as singularly symplectic reduced spaces. These are symplectic manifolds, and they just, these leaves of F happen to be their connected components. Actually, one can go the other way around. One would want to ask to say, can we reconstruct the leaves, the connected components of the projected level sets of the momentum map? And the answer is yes. This is somewhat cryptic, so let me explain what I mean by this. Before I explain this, I should add a third property, namely, which I haven't stated here, namely that if we take one of these, if we take a projection of the level set of the momentum map and take all the leaves of F which are contained in it, they give us stratification of this set. And that's the theorem of Schirmer and Lehrmann and Bethe and Lehrmann. So now how do I get it back? If I want to know what is the level set of the momentum map, I take all the leaves, I take all the leaves of F and close them. By the way, I assume that I know that the momentum map exists. So if I close them, I have some closed sets, and then I can take a leaf which sits, the closure of the leaf which sits in this set, and will be adjoining to it closures of all the leaves which have non-empty intersection. And in this way, you get a connected component of the set. So essentially, I mean, there's still more structure which has to be really understood, but that's roughly what the situation is. Aha, now let me make one more comment. Because of this, we can get, because these are the leaves of F are actually the simplex singularly reduced spaces, in the case of Hamiltonian systems, we actually can get, this structure allows us to get away without ever using the momentum map, as long as it exists. Now suppose it doesn't exist. Then still, leaves of F are symplectic manifolds, and that was. But what happens is that then they will be might be immersed manifolds, and therefore their closures might be very complicated. So let's now pass to the distribution of Hamiltonian system with symmetry. Time at what, 3:15? Okay, that's plenty. So let's look what a situation with the distributional Hamiltonian system. I have for every smooth function, I have a distributional Hamiltonian vector field of this function, and so I can define the generalized distribution spanned by these vector fields. It gives a foliation of P by accessible sets. I can project this foliation to the orbit space, and lo and behold, I mean, that requires some work, but this is actually, this each leaf is a manifold, most likely immersed, but it is endowed with a structure of a distributional Hamiltonian system, actually generalized, in the sense that the distribution H on the leaf need not have constant rank. That's what you lose in non-holonomic reduction. The rank might be jumping, but it will be jumping the right way, so we can span by smooth vectors. So for a long time I was very puzzled why this non-holonomic, because this is essentially non-holonomic reduction, why it gives so good results. And the answer is precisely what should have been left here, is that essentially we can do the symplectic reduction using the momentum map really sparingly or not at all, and then recover the momentum map. Essentially, the existence of the momentum map tells us that leaves of F are embedded manifolds, not immersed. So essentially, that's the reason for this analogy. And now let me try to stress the point. You see, we were so used. I was working on symplectic reduction. I was absolutely certain that the fact that the symplectic form is closed is absolutely essential, that nothing will go in the case when this form is not closed. Here, one could define a momentum map, but it doesn't play a very good role. But so you look at the symplectic form on the distribution, on leaves of the distribution, not leaves, on the spaces of the distribution, you have even no way of saying whether it's closed or not. Suppose that the distribution H is the whole tangent bundle space of P. Then you have an almost symplectic dynamics. So the form is it looks like symplectic dynamics, but the form is not closed, and the reduction still is very similar. So now let's go to the multisymplectic case, and the first impression was that, well, since in the multisymplectic case we are dealing with a closed form, things should be nice, but they aren't. What is missing is the following. So we have a closed form, but if you look at the differential equations, this differential equation is essentially, it's not an evolution type of equation. You don't have initial value problem here. If you want initial value problem, you have to pass to the space of Cauchy data, and you are doing symplectic dynamics, Hamiltonian dynamics again. So essentially here, what you are doing, if you are looking at this equation, you have to give me a whole section, and then this is a test verifying whether this condition is satisfied or not. So I'm missing the evolution property of the system, and also I'm missing the conservation laws. This theory admits conservation laws, but there are the divergence form. So there is a different type of differential equations. So essentially, what can we do here? Well, the best I can do is the following, is I can take these differential equations and rewrite them in terms of explicitly invariant quantities. They are no longer that nice. However, people who have been doing reduction on the Lagrangian reduction, on the tangent bundle space, know that this reduction is also not very nice, because you have the reduced system, set of reduced equation, separated into two parts. The first part looks like Lagrangian system with external forces. We can get it here too. But the second is something else. Now here we'll get three sets of equations. One of them could be considered similar with external forces. Now, what I have to, what I need here is an additional structure, and that's the one which I used as the G-invariant metric on P. It will play essential role here. It played no role for Hamiltonian systems. So what is the idea of this reduction? Well, first, imagine that my section, sigma, has range in one strat. So it's nice. Things are so much nicer. So what I can do is I take the tangent bundle space, the tangent bundle space to P along the stratum, and decompose into three components. This is the normal component, which I defined before, normal with respect to any metric, in particular this one. This component is really tangent to the orbit of the group, and this horizontal is normal to the orbit, so it's like a connection. Except that it's not a proper connection, because, well, along for a fixed stratum, it's okay, but if I go from stratum to stratum, so dimension will be jumping. So what I can do, okay, I have this section sigma, and from omega, and what I'm trying to do is decompose omega and tangent of sigma into these three components. I don't want to write all the details because they are really gory. Okay, but anyway, you decompose this equation. So you put it in here and then split according to the decomposition, according to each component in this part, and this. You see what happens, okay, why do I have to do it? Because if I have the orbit maps from P to P mod G, and in particular, if I'm restricted to stratum, I am mapping into manifold, so it's a nice, smooth situation. However, the form omega, it does not project, because there will be vectors which are tangent to the orbits, which are not which do not annihilate omega. So I have to decompose omega into pieces and project each piece separately. And so what are the pieces? So I use this decomposition, and the pieces will correspond after projection, well, correspond to equivariant maps from here, here, or here to P, and so I can pass to the quotient. And I get actually three types of equations for depending what the pieces are. And these equations, once I've passed to the quotient, the equations are completely invariant, right? Because I'm working the quotient. We have also a reconstruction technique. Let me make only comment about this thing. You see, well, first let's look at this and this. These objects, these quotients, are bundles over P mod G, vector bundles over P mod G, and then the corresponding components of omega are linear maps, some sort of. There is linear structure. Now, this beast has messy singularities, but the singularities are conical. So what happens is that the pushing forward the corresponding component of omega, pushing forward, projecting here, does not correspond to a linear map, but corresponds to homogeneous map, because you have only the generators of the cone left. And this is a technicality. I should leave it here because it's important. So now this was an optimal case. One could really say that this was the not a singular reduction at all. This was a regular reduction because I was sitting in this trap. Now what happens is that suppose that range of sigma is not contained in this trap. And now you can use the stratification. You have to use all the properties of the stratification structure. So you take the partition of the domain of sigma given by the sets, which I call S sub k, inverse images by sigma of the strata. By the properties of stratifications, the union of connected components of these sets, which are open in the base, is dense in the domain. That's where I'm using essentially frontier condition and local finiteness in one go. Well, then we have no problems, because what we can do is we look at the section sigma, restrict it to each of these sets which are open in M. We do this, we check this thing, whether the equations are satisfied or not. And if the equations are satisfied in each of these sets, then sigma is by assumption continuous. They have to be satisfied in the whole space. So it really, this structure really suffices to get the information. But it's really quite messy. Now, I still have 2 minutes, I understand. I would like to make a comment because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about multisymplectic reduction. I got comments, reaction to this result was a complaint of the referee was that I didn't do gauge theory reduction for Young-Mills theory or whatever. Now, the problem is that the gauge group, you see, P here is just it's the finite jet essentially. In most cases, typical cases, just the first jet of sections of maps. So what happens of the fields, gauge theory does not act. A gauge group is a genuinely infinite dimensional group which doesn't act properly there. If you tried to get, it acts actually, say for Young-Mills theory, it acts on first jets, but if you try to get the orbit space of the gauge group on the first jets, it's rather unpleasant. One really cannot say anything. So this multisymplectic reduction can only handle finite dimensional symmetries. Things which are simple. If one really wants to do something more ambitious, one has to go to infinite dimension and do Hamiltonian theory in the multisymplectic case, in the symplectic case. Well, I'm sorry, my talk is incomplete. I don't know what we can do about the pictures, but thank you very much. And happy birthday, Jerry.